couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's new movies are Upgrade, Action Point, Adrift, and Beast. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the only new movie out this week on DVD and Blu-ray, Annihilation. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I'm going to take the whole new segment and deep dive into this whole Roseanne quagmire that happened. And that is the whole firing of Roseanne and canceling of her show. It's not just firing Roseanne. That's the thing. A lot of people say, oh, she was fired. And she certainly was. But they canceled the show, and they acted with impunity and full prejudice to get rid of the show. But the thing that bothers me actually about this whole thing, kind of at its core, is there now seems to be a debate as to whether or not what she tweeted is, in fact, a racial slur. Spoiler alert, it is a racial slur. She implied Valerie Jarrett looked like Planet of the Apes. It's not debatable whether or not that's a slur. It is a slur. This country has had a long history, even before this country was officially founded, had a long history of comparing African Americans and at that time Africans who were just brought over as slaves, and comparing them to apes and monkeys. And that's went on all the way through. Even recently, you see that. That is not something that is ubiquitous to everybody. That has been focused on African Americans for the entirety of the American experience. And it's a horrible thing to do. So it's different than, like, you know, Bill Maher calling Trump a baboon. And, you know, is that rude? Sure. Is that an insult? Sure. Is it riffing off of his looks? Yeah. But there's not a history of calling white men baboons that cuts deep to the core of the racial issue. Just as I'm Irish, I'm of Irish descent. Calling Irish people drunks is equally as offensive, because it goes into this core stereotype that is used to dehumanize them. The other thing is, she was not fired for tweets about Chelsea Clinton. Yes, that was involved in this whole tweet storm she had, but ABC didn't cancel her show because she incorrectly said that Chelsea Clinton was married to a George Soros's nephew and then went off on some crazy conspiracy theory rant that's not true about George Soros. Say what you want to about George Soros. I'm not defending him. I'm just saying he didn't do what she says he did in the tweet. But that's not why she got fired. I mean, she probably could have survived that, but it's that just that full-blown, hard-hitting racial slur that is impossible to back away from. Oh, she's like, oh, I was just joking. Yes, we know you were joking. It was a racist joke. And this isn't something where she could have feigned ignorance that this is an issue. Roseanne Barr spent years in the stand-up circuit. She knows what jokes are jokes. She knows what jokes are offensive and what's not. Now, it'd be different if it was somebody who was just walked out of everyday life and suddenly became a celebrity overnight, but she's been a celebrity for decades, and she knows this. This is nothing that she is ignorant of. And no amount of Ambien is going to make you create that tweet. What it'll do is it'll maybe take down your judgment and let you tweet it out. But that still doesn't make you racist. Tweeting the comment makes you a racist. I found it interesting that this actually led to just the complete annihilation of her show. And I have to think, what was going on behind the scenes? I don't know. I mean, I wasn't in on this. But I think it was funny. When that thing came out, ABC moved very swiftly. And I mean, a lot of people say they took their time and they took too long, but they have to figure out stuff with the lawyers, but they move fast. And Wanda Sykes quit before that even happened. And you had Sarah Gilbert distancing herself. We don't know what was going on behind the scenes. We do know that she already had stepped in a couple bear traps with Twitter since the show came back on the air. So this may have been like the straw that broke the camel's back, or they may have jumped the gun and renewed the show for a second season and then realized that she was causing a lot of problems on set and then finally like, oh, this is a great job to get rid of it. I predicted this. Let me rewind back to April 6th, me talking about Roseanne and what she has to worry about in the future. The other thing we got to watch out for, that Roseanne has to watch out for, and she's already stepped in a couple bear traps, is this is different now than it was in the 90s, where you can really expose yourself as a kook very quickly with a Twitter account. And Roseanne's always been kind of bonkers anyways, and she smokes a lot of weed, and she is very outspoken in terms of her politics, but it's out there, and you can search it and find it, and it's just a matter of time before she says something stupid that really torpedoes her show. So there you go. I'm prophetic. Now, somebody pointed out to me that that's not hard to predict, that Roseanne was going to say something clueless and goofy and insidious on the internet. But I think it's interesting that I pretty much said exactly what happened, and that was 2 months ago. Now, the other thing I find interesting, and there's a lot of people who are like, well, why can't they just continue to the show? Why don't they just kill off her character, or call the show The Connors, or have it be about Jackie, or bring in Christopher Plummer to play Roseanne for the next season? Here's why they got rid of it fully and completely. They are severing all ties with Roseanne Barr. And that's how you know that this was probably more than just a single tweet, and there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. There is no way to untangle Roseanne Barr from this show any more than there is a way to untangle Bill Cosby from The Cosby Show. This show was based partially, at least, on her stand-up character. She's a creator of the show. You can't change that. You cannot take that credit away from somebody. And that's why they got rid of the show completely, because even if they fired her as executive producer and fired her as a writer and got rid of her as a character, she still would have a characters created by or a created credit. And they said, we're not going to allow any money to go to her because of this. It has to do with a lot more than one stupid tweet. And people said, well, is it just going to get renewed? Are they going to bring it on like to Fox? Or are they going to put it on Netflix or anything like that? They can't, because Sarah Gilbert was instrumental in getting this thing put together again, and I don't think she's willing to take that risk again. Wanda Sykes was one of the people that helped put together this from a production level. She's not going to do that again. And even so, like the woman who plays her granddaughter on the show was saying, I'm trying to get out of the show now. And then you have the kid who played DJ, who's an adult now, and he's incensed at her, and she's yelling at him on Twitter. I think people, they've all realized, you know what, this is over and done with. And Roseanne Barr, you did it to yourself. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is The Sisters Brothers, which stars Joaquin Phoenix and John C. Reilly as brothers in the Old West.
We're the Sisters Brothers.
S-I-S-T-E-R-S.
We have enough money to stop for good.
Stop what?
Killing people.
Yeah, right.
What does this worm have that's so interesting?
What's the great challenge that all prospectors face? How do I get the gold just beneath my feet?
Worm has a formula. You pour it in the river, it lights up all the gold.
I'm curious as to how funny the movie's going to be, because the trailer plays very funny, but I almost feel like all the really humorous gags were crammed into one trailer, and the rest of it's going to be a little more dour and downtrodden. I've not read the book. So, I mean, this movie looks interesting, but I just get the sense that this trailer is not exactly what the movie's going to be like. Now, the next trailer I want to hit is Peppermint, which opens on September 7th.
5 years ago, Riley North just disappeared. Completely off the grid.
So she spends the last 5 years doing what?
Training.
Well, that's new.
You honestly think Riley North did this?
Today's the 5-year anniversary of her family's murder. She's back. Corrupt judges. Dirty cops.
What do I want? I want justice.
This is Jennifer Gardner trying to get back into the action hero genre. I mean, of course, she kind of came on the scene with that when she did Alias. This is another Death Wish movie. You know, we had Upgrade this week. We had the Death Wish remake that came out a couple months ago. And now we've got Jennifer Gardner doing basically a female Death Wish. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Adrift and Beast.
Let's party. Let's rock. We got tickets to the Santa Mark. Let's shake it. Let's roll.
Ah!
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. And let's start off with Adrift. A couple embarks on a long seaward journey only to be caught in a hurricane and stranded in the middle of the ocean.
We're thousands of miles from land. We're not in any flight paths. That's like a 1,500 square mile search area.
A needle in a blue haystack.
Is anybody there?
My ribs are broken. My legs shattered. I'm dead weight.
I've been sailed to Hawaii.
It's like a 2,000 mile shot at a moving target. If you miss Hawaii...
If we miss Hawaii, we die.
Full disclosure on this one, I had kind of a crazy week. Now, earlier this weekend, I had during Memorial Day weekend, my family, we do a movie marathon every Memorial Day weekend. We did science fiction. It was all Mars-based stuff. So we watched The Martian, and we were going to watch Mars Attacks, but everyone ended up falling asleep. But we also watched Robinson Crusoe on Mars, and we watched Invaders from Mars, and we watched Warlords from Atlantis, which hopefully I'll be talking about that at some point in the future. It's a movie that I've been searching for years to find. I can't find it in America. It's this old Doug McClure movie directed by Kevin Connor. Now, if you want to see some of those other movies that the two of them did in the 70s, go watch the new Mystery Science Theater on Netflix, and you'll find two of them. I think The Land That Time Forgot and At the Earth Core. Those are ones that are directed by Kevin Connor, starring Doug McClure. Warlords of Atlantis was something I saw in 1978 when I was a kid, and I loved it. It's a terrible movie, but it's still kind of fun. And I finally was able to get my hands on a copy of it, and so we watched that. And Doug McClure, to me, it's a great tragedy in the world that Doug McClure and Tom Atkins never did a movie together, because they're two of my favorite cheesy, bad movie actors. So I had that going on this weekend, and I got busy, and then, of course, you had the short weekend, and Tuesday hit, and then boom, you know. And then suddenly, it's the end of the week. Apparently, there was an Adrift screening. I just missed it. It got lost in the shuffle. This happens every now and then. So my apologies to the studio. I'm not dinging you for this movie. I'm not even going to give you a grade for this movie because I didn't see it. But I didn't see it because you didn't show it to me. I didn't see it just because scheduling-wise was a snafu and I wasn't able to see it. So good on them. Good on the studio for screening Adrift, because you should screen these movies, whether or not they're good or not. You know, I mean, they're that's fine. Now, this one stars Shailene Woodley, who we all know from mostly well-known by a lot of people for being in the Divergent series. She was in the TV show Secret Life of the American Teenager. That's kind of where she got her start. She really wasn't that good in that show, but then she did The Descendants, which put her on the map. And she's done some big stuff. I mean, kind of doing the Divergent movies was, I think, kind of a misstep for her. And she really hasn't kind of jumped back on the horse with this. But, you know, hey, if you like Shailene Woodley, you'll probably want to see this movie, because it's her on a boat for like 90 minutes. It's a man versus nature type thing, or a woman versus nature. Sam Chaplin, he plays the guy who owns the boat, and they're like a couple, but he gets injured. And so she kind of has, it's a woman against nature, and she's trying to save him and save the boat and save her life. It's another one of those people versus nature type movies, like The Mountain Between Us, or they've done a bunch of these, especially even recently. But I can't give it great, because I didn't see it, because I missed the screening and it's my fault. So, you know, this is going to be one film that I'm not actually giving a grade for. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about Beast. A troubled young woman in a small island community in Britain faces a conflict between her controlling family and her passionate working-class boyfriend, who is a suspect in a series of grisly murders.
In captivity. Some go insane.
There is speculation that the disappearance is connected to the unsolved murders of three other girls over the past 4 years.
Sweetheart, you can't just change the rules because someone's shown an interest. Maybe I've been too soft on you.
I know that people make mistakes.
This is a smaller film, and it's slowly opening around the United States. I think this weekend it is at my hometown theater, the Gateway Film Center in Columbus, Ohio. So if you're listening to this in the Central Ohio area, you can actually go see this. But this is it's a British film. And it's a thriller, but it takes some time to get into, because it starts off as just more of a straight drama. This girl, she has some issues. She's like in her early 20s, but she has some issues, and she's living with her family, and her family's very controlling, and because they had to take her out of school when she was younger for a reason that you find out through the film. And she falls in love with this kind of blue-collar handyman who may have a checkered past, but she has a checkered past, and she is not stable, is probably the best way to describe this character. Now, the main character of Maul is played by Jesse Buckley, and she's quite good in this movie. I mean, she's really good. She carries the film. And she plays that disturbed young woman, the kind of girl who you never quite know if she's gonna freak out at you or shower you with kisses. That kind of a character. She's very outgoing and she wants to be involved, but then she can kind of just turn on a dime emotionally. And that's a powerful role that she plays. And she controls that, and she does it without being victimized. She's got like some mental issues. She has hallucination issues, and she has, like I said, she's done some horrible things in the past. And that's kind of what makes the movie work. And you don't even get the sense of how oppressive her family is. You just sort of see it reflected in her behavior. Occasionally you see the parents and the family sort of exerting control. And it is this tiny little town, and she sort of feels that she's stuck there. And of course her boyfriend, she had found, and they started dating, and then they fell in love, and she sort of discovered sex through him, and it's a big deal for her, and she's still, in a way, because she's been sheltered by her family, she's still kind of an adolescent, even though she's in her 20s and she has a regular job. And one of the things she wants to do is just leave. She wants to get out of there, but the world doesn't spin on her own axis. But it does take some time. The movie does seem to play a little long, even though it's about an hour and 45 minutes. So it's not a slag of a movie. It doesn't take forever to get through, but it also doesn't breeze through either. Like I said, for the first act of the film, you kind of just feel like it's a, you know, everyday love story, an everyday drama, and just somebody's a little off kilter. But as the movie goes forward, and then we learn more about these murders that are happening, that have been happening for years, it gets darker and a little more twisted, and it starts using dream logic in the film, and you start going into layers of what you don't even know is real or not, and that's what kind of makes the film work. And the acting's fine, but like I said, it's the main character that really carries the thing, Jesse Buckley as the actress, and Johnny Flynn plays her boyfriend. He's okay. He's not really great. He is much less of a force in this film than Buckley is. And Buckley is what carries it. So I think the big thing I wish that they had done is they had gotten a better guy to play the role, because Buckley is so good in her portrayal that he just seems flat and broken. Whereas if they had a better actor, if they had a more powerful actor, and they directed him differently, they could have really had a nice balance. But in a way, she shines over him through everything, as she does everybody else in the film, that it almost does her a disservice, because she's so good, she kind of feels like she's slumming. And the movie's not bad, it's just she's well above the level of the rest of the cast. And it ultimately makes an interesting, kind of creepy, disturbing movie. So ultimately, I'm going to say that Beast kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Upgrade and Action Point. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. The one I did see was Upgrade. After his wife is killed and he is paralyzed in an attack, a man is given a computer implant that reactivates his body and becomes self-aware, leading that man to track down the people who killed his wife.
Four guys murdered my wife. If I could find this man, I'd do it.
What if I told you I could offer you something that would enable you to walk again? I call it STEM, a computer chip that has the potential to change everything. It's a new, better brain.
Oh my God.
I am STEM, the system operating your body for you.
You'll need a plan.
You now have full control again, Greg.
These two movies were not screened at all. Weirdly enough, Upgrade was promoted at film festivals, but Blumhouse, which is who produced this movie, they really don't screen much. And that's because they do movies on the cheap. They go for the horror audience. They don't always get wide reviews. What they do, these movies tend to, if they're good movies, you know, something like Happy Death Day or something like Upgrade, they get good reviews from sort of like internet press, from people who go to film festivals like Fantastic Fest or South by Southwest, these more younger skewing alternative film festivals. They tend to do kind of well in the reviews. But if you get sort of like the Rex Reed critics out there, they don't do well with them. So sort of like that mainstream critics, they kind of hold these sometimes. And I don't know if they screen this in New York or LA, but I know people who have seen this already and it got a lot of buzz. And I was kind of like, oh, I kind of want to see this one, but I kind of am committed to go see Action Point. What was interesting is I went to the theater, and while in the earlier in the week, I had checked the screenings and there were screenings for Action Point on Thursday night. I get to the theater, there are no screenings for Action Point. I think there may have been one at like 12:01. So I didn't go see that then. I just went and saw like a 9 o'clock showing of Upgrade instead, which is kind of good because it was a movie I kind of wanted to see in the first place. Upgrade is sort of like this Bionic Man meets Death Wish is probably the best way to describe it. It's directed and written by Lee Whannell, I think is how you say his name. He's the guy who originally wrote Saw, the original one, not the whole series. James Wan directed it, but Lee Whannell wrote it. And he's also was in the Insidious movies. He played one of the, you know how they have the two ghost hunters who went around with Lin Shaye's character, Specs, and I forget the other guy's name. He's the smaller guy. And he's well known in the horror genre. And I think that this is kind of a clever movie. It's not groundbreaking necessarily. There's certain things in this movie that I've seen before. It is somewhat predictable. Actually, at times, extremely predictable. But it also takes some gutsy turns and it makes some gutsy moves. And I have to say, I enjoyed watching where it went. I have a great history in watching science fiction movies. I'm not talking about just something that's marginally science fiction or even a big blockbuster. I mean, Star Wars and all the movies. That's big science fiction. That's grand scope science fiction. I'm talking about like these smaller science fiction films. A lot of times these smaller sci-fi movies don't even make it to the regular mainstream theaters. Sometimes they're just kind of, well, at least they used to be sort of relegated to arts theater. Something like Cube, if you remember the movie Cube from the mid-90s. And I've loved watching those movies. I've seen them at movie marathons in the middle of the night, where it's something that you would normally not run into until you found it on VHS, so I'd see it in the theater. And it's neat to see these movies with the soundtrack and the effects and the atmosphere that they give. Not everything needs to be huge and grand and open and massive like Star Wars or Blade Runner or The Infinity War. This is just it's a human story. And like good science fiction, it looks at what technology is doing for us now and whether that's getting taken too far and whether it does go too far. And it does kind of question, you know, how integrated into technology should we be as a species? And I thought that it actually handles it pretty well because it puts it at an indeterminate time in the future. Sometimes when you see these movies where they have future technology, the technology is so beyond what we'd have. This one just kind of builds upon stuff we already have. It has a self-driving cars, but we have self-driving cars now. And this is maybe self-driving cars in 20 years. It has Bluetooth technology, but it's maybe Bluetooth technology in about 20 years. And yeah, there's this little implant that he gets on is a bit, you know, over the top, but it does act essentially like a smartphone. It acts like smart technology. And I thought this was really interesting because it was a different approach. It's not something that you usually see. So overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, like I said, it's a bit cliche at times and somewhat predictable, especially in like big things, you know, how they kind of wrap things up in the movie. But overall, I thought it was an enjoyable film. It's certainly worth checking out. It is violent, though. I mean, it's rated R and it has some very grisly moments. But if you can handle them, then it's absolutely worth checking out.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about Action Point. Johnny Knoxville stars as a man who tries to reboot a struggling amusement park by getting rid of the safety precautions on the rides.
What's our attendance today?
Down about 45%.
I suppose you probably heard you got some competition in town. They got roller coasters and a chairlift that actually works.
This is our home. We can't just let somebody take it.
What this place needs is an excitement enema. We're going to make this place fast and loose. Every ride, steady go. Every attraction, no rules, no speed limits. Just pure fun.
That sounds kind of dangerous.
Let's see what this baby can do.
I don't know. I mean, this movie looks like it might be funny. Like I said, I tried to go. I find it odd that they didn't screen this. Not that I find it odd they didn't screen it. I find it odd that they didn't have Thursday night screenings. This seems to be a Thursday night screening crowd. This seems to be like the same crowd that went and saw Super Troopers about a month or so ago, the Thursday night show. It felt like those people should have been in the front row for this movie. Maybe, I might be going out on a limb here, but maybe Johnny Knoxville's shtick is getting old. I mean, he certainly is. That guy's 47. 47. I'm 47. If I were to do some of these, I mean, I can't even think about doing some of these stunts. Whereas for me, I mean, a stunt for me is, can I walk up and down the stairs? Can I get in and out of the basement to go get my laundry without spraining my ankle or blowing a hip? And Johnny Knoxville's still bouncing around. But it does feel a little desperate. I like the bad grandpa stuff because I thought that was a little bit of an evolution out, you know, from the Jackass series. It's one thing to do those shows when you're in your early 30s, which is, I think, how old he was when he started doing the Jackass series, or maybe even late 20s. But after three films, and now you're just like, I mean, he's kind of going back to the same obnoxious stunts that probably are funny to watch, but after a certain point, you're like, you're 47, man. Haven't you grown out of this yet? And it feels like the guy who's in his 50s who wants to connect with his kids. And so he opens a MySpace page, not realizing that MySpace is well gone and kids have no interest in MySpace or even Facebook at this point. I mean, you want to connect with kids and the teenagers, you got kids. I've got kids. They don't really use Facebook. They use Twitter a little bit. They use Snapchat. And they just do group chats, and there's, you know, of course, Tumblr is also a big thing. But I realize that even now, trying to connect with your kids on Facebook, you still look like an old person. You know, my dad was never cool. But he always will say, he'll be like, oh, so was that kid you went to high school with, was he a cool dude? And he'd say it like that. And I'm like, Dad, no way. Is you saying that make it cool? He has no idea what it was like to be cool. He has no idea what it's like to be cool now. That's my dad. That's kind of the charm of my dad, who was born in the 30s, you know. This feels like Johnny Knoxville's, like my dad walking around wearing young person's clothes saying, hey, are you a cool dude? Are you a big man on campus? So, I don't know. Maybe Action Point's good. I didn't see it. They didn't screen it. It didn't show it. It has to get a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm deep diving into the box office performance of Solo, A Star Wars Story, and I'm going to talk about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Annihilation.
And don't forget to watch the movie. Don't forget to watch the show.
Thank you very much for coming.
Hello!
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now I'm going to take some time from the movie reviews to talk about Solo, A Star Wars Story. And I know I talked about the movie last week, but I want to talk about its performance because I think it's important to sort of recenter ourselves and figure out what was going on. And the thing that bothers me about this is the people using terms like calling it a flop or a failure or it stumbled or it sputtered. Solo, A Star Wars Story, over the four-day weekend, made $103 million. I wish I could fail so spectacularly. And I don't care how you cut it, $100 million for an opening weekend, even if it's over a four-day long holiday, that's an incredibly good number. If anything, Solo underperformed. It didn't fail. It didn't flop. It's also a high watermark for Ron Howard, who everyone thinks, oh, is a big, huge movie director. He's never hit $100 million opening weekend for his movies, even when you have big ones like The Da Vinci Code. And if you look at the worldwide total, it was like 160-some million for the worldwide. And yeah, that's small. But you, first of all, you got to remember, Star Wars does not play as well overseas as something like Fast and Furious or even Transformers. For some reason, and I noticed this with The Force Awakens, even though the numbers were huge in America, they weren't duplicated overseas. The other thing you got to look at is they've been comparing this to Rogue One. Well, Rogue One's not a fair comparison. First of all, it came out in December, which was when the other two Star Wars movies came out that Disney did. And it was only the second movie. It was the follow-up to Force Awakens. That's like saying Iron Man 3 was a remarkable bump compared to the other Iron Man movies. Well, it was the follow-up to The Avengers. So you're going to get that kind of inflated box office number for Rogue One. If this came out in December, you would have done similarly well. I'm reticent to say franchise fatigue. Everyone loves to throw that around. I don't think it's franchise fatigue. I think they maybe shouldn't release them 6 months away from each other. I think there may have been some marketing issues. The marketing didn't pop on this one. I know there's a lot of people who complained about the cinematography. Now, if you have it properly calibrated, the movie looks fine. But if you're looking at it in 3D and they're playing it dim, as they often do to save money because theaters are hemorrhaging right now, yeah, you're going to have problems seeing it. But I also think something, and not a whole lot of people are actually addressing this issue, I think that some of this might have been also backlash from The Last Jedi. If you compare The Last Jedi to even Rogue One, or especially Force Awakens, it did a fraction of those movies. It still made tons of money because it was the second Star Wars movie, but The Last Jedi was an incredibly divisive movie, especially to kind of old school fans. And there's something else that you saw in Last Jedi that I think spilled over a bit into Solo, at least in the reporting side of it. But don't tell me that The Last Jedi is going to be remembered as the best Star Wars movie. I see people on Twitter just demanding that that's what's going to happen. It's not. There's a lot of problems with The Last Jedi, and I know this after having watched it again, and you can go back and listen to my Blu-ray review of it. I still find it interesting, but it kind of crushed the template. It crushed the formula, and there are people who love that, but that's not good for ongoing stories. It's like superhero movies. You really think that they're not going to do some stuff with the Avengers that's going to go right back into formula? Yeah, they totally are, because formula works. That's what makes billion-dollar movies. And you can say, well, it's not all about money. Yeah, it is. In Hollywood, it is all about money. When they're making movies that they're putting $200 to $300 million into, yes, it is all about money. The other thing is, there was a lot of competition from Avengers and Deadpool. Usually in May, there's a big movie that comes out like opening week of May, and then they kind of struggle for a couple weeks, and then you have Memorial Day. And Memorial Day is not the big windfall money-making weekend that it used to be. The big movie weekend is that first weekend of May. That was taken up with Avengers Infinity War. And that's still sucking the air out of the room. And Avengers Infinity War and Deadpool and Star Wars all kind of draw from the same crowd. On top of it, you didn't have any big stars. When you have like the Marvel movies, a lot of times you have a big name in there. I mean, you had Woody Harrelson in Solo, but Alden Ehrenreich was not a huge draw. He was not somebody that people recognized. Now, I think that there's some bad press that's been going around because everybody wants to talk about, oh, the directors were fired and they had reshoots and it cost a lot of money. If anything, that's what is going to make or break the overperform, underperform budget of Star Wars, is that it had a lot of bad juju going into it, and it cost more money to do reshoots and change directors. But you can't have a movie make twice as much as A Quiet Place opening weekend and then just say, oh, well, that nobody wants to see that movie. Well, that's the movie they spent so much money on. A Quiet Place was a relatively cheap film. I mean, like John Carter, you go back, you look at John Carter. That was one that had an overinflated budget and it did okay overseas, but it just could not make up the money domestically. Oh, and there's one other thing. There's like social engineering that's going on at a level in these movies that kind of went over the board in The Last Jedi. And you saw it in Solo, and not, you didn't see it in Solo, but you saw it in the press and the publicity and the interviews. All this talk about, is Lando a pansexual and all that? I don't think the standard Star Wars fan doesn't care. Film Twitter cares like crazy about that, because you still have these people beating a drum saying, we need a gay character in Star Wars. We need a trans character in Star Wars. We need this in Star Wars. And there are people who just demand that Poe Dameron is gay, and they have to make that part of canon. And it's not from homophobia. It's just nobody wants Star Wars to be the platform, take on these socialists. So they want it to be just a fun movie. And there were so many stories written about Lando and was he a pansexual and that and the other. When you actually watch the movie, it's played off as a joke. Really is anything. It's really played off as a joke. And it only kind of got traction on film Twitter. And when people started asking Donald Glover in his interviews about this, and then it was like, oh yes, we're going to do that, and I think that this is where we're going, and you know, oh, we're progressive and everything. Whereas I'm being asked on the radio, is this the thing? And I go, I didn't even notice it. If I hadn't heard these stories, I wouldn't even have thought twice about it. And the point is you can't have a super popular movie like that and then just kind of cram all this stuff in there and make it look like you're ticking off things on a golf card to make sure that you get all the social issues in there. And the bottom line is, not every installment in the series is going to have to make $1 billion. You can't keep that up. You know, even Marvel knows that. You know, he had Infinity. We had a nice thing with Black Panther doing so well, and then he had Infinity War. But when they have Ant-Man and the Wasp come out later this summer, it's not going to come anywhere close to that. It'd be lucky if it could perform the way Solo performed. And the same thing when Captain Marvel comes out in March. You are not going to get that massive box office. You're not going to get the $1 billion box office for those, and that's okay. And I don't think that Disney's in trouble, and I don't think they're going to stop making Star Wars films, but I think they're going to maybe take the chance and say, you know what, if we're going to do one of these movies, let's get the stars, put the star treatment in the movies. Let's not try and socially engineer. Let's make an easier to project look of the film so it doesn't look washed out in half the theaters that are poorly projecting it. And let's not crank them out so close to each other and have the lesser movie come out under the shadow of the bigger movie that's one of the episodes. Solo's going to be fine. Let's not have a bake sale for Disney just yet. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. There's only really one movie that came out on Blu-ray this week, and that is Annihilation. A scientist enters a mysterious atmospheric anomaly in hopes of finding out what happened to her husband.
It's something they termed the Shimmer. We sent in drones and teams of people, but nothing comes back. The boundary's getting bigger, it's expanding. We're talking cities, states.
You need to know what's inside.
So do I.
Check this out.
It's like they're stuck in a continuous mutation.
Anything interesting in there?
No.
This one I remember seeing in the theaters. I liked it to a degree. I actually think Upgrade was a better, more cohesive science fiction movie. This one has its problems, some serious problems. So I think that Annihilation has some interesting stuff going on, but the characters are just do stupid, stupid, stupid things. Like they have this group on film Twitter for The Last Jedi saying, this is the best Star Wars movie, and that's what it's going to be remembered at. Even if you tell me it's bad, ha ha ha, I'll know better in the future. There's the same group of people who are banging that drum for Annihilation, saying it's the greatest movie of the year, and it's so good, and it's going to be remembered. I don't think that's the case. It didn't do terribly well in the theaters, and there's some serious story problems. I mean, like, I'm not talking about, like, stuff that I don't understand. I'm just talking about poor writing and poor decisions and bad characters and a bad construction of the film. And sometimes doesn't even make a whole lot of sense from a scientific perspective. The same way, like, Arrival was the same way. There's some real massive science holes in Arrival that do not work at all. But everyone just is like, oh, well, I don't understand it, so it must be awesome. Annihilation is fine for a rent, but I have to say it only kind of rocks, and it's certainly not worth a buy.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Hereditary, Hotel Artemis, and Ocean's 8. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.